This podcast is brought to you by Balance 7. Stop procrastinating and get your energy back. New customers can save 20% and get free shipping at balance7.com with code Howie.
Better strap yourself in. It's time for the Howie Carr Show.
Iran in this moment.
Don't.
God! Tell the world that I saved you all.
Don't tell me what to do.
Iran has launched an historic attack against Israel. Iran sent drones and missiles toward Israeli territory.
Live from the Matthews Brothers Studios.
I once had a potato mailed to me. It came in a FedEx box. It was an actual potato. It's because that within the Fox universe, I used to be called Humpty Dumpty.
I want to look like mashed potatoes.
Who's your captain? Howie Carr.
They need more cowbell as they go down that first mile. Downhill. Everybody feels froggy when they get out there.
I ate more fettuccine alfredo and drank less water than I have in my entire life.
Rump swabs, hacks, and moon bats beware. It's Howie Carr.
Welcome, everybody, to the Howie Carr Show. I'm Toby Leary, sitting in for the captain, who has a much-deserved day off here on Patriots Day. I'll be with you today and tomorrow. And this is the actual celebration day of Patriots Day, which I won't be sitting behind this chair for on the 19th, which commemorates the battles of Lexington and Concord. So a big day in our history, in our nation's founding, in our history. And, you know, it was funny. There was some talk last week on Twitter and X, as it's known now, and somebody tagged me in a post saying maybe we should, instead of like just run marathons and have baseball games, we should have a go to the range day and go shooting on the celebration of Patriots Day to commemorate the shot heard around the world and the skirmishes that ensued. There you go. So I'm in favor of that, and I like that idea. And so maybe next year I'll get my act together and we'll figure out how to do that at Cape Gunworks and in Hyannis. And maybe some other people will follow suit, but how appropriate for Massachusetts. And, you know, I'm wearing my Tyranny is Back t-shirt as we have so much going on in the local state house with this conference committee that is deciding the future of the Second Amendment as it pertains to you and I in Massachusetts. And ironically, they think that they have the constitutional authority to limit the Second Amendment and further infringe upon it, even though they would never dare extrapolate the same things that they've done to the Second Amendment to other constitutionally enumerated amendments like the First Amendment, Fourth Amendment, Fifth Amendment, you know, fill in the blank. So it leads to a large smorgasbord of discussion here on Patriots Day about what the original founders' intent was of acknowledging the right to keep and bear arms. And I've heard all the arguments from anti-gunners like, oh, you got to read the full thing about a well-regulated militia, comma, being necessary to the security of a free state, comma, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. See, it's talking about the National Guard. That's what that is. And, you know, I think from a very pedestrian outlook, you would say, why would the government acknowledge its right to arms in the Bill of Rights for the people? Like every other right they enumerate, they say freedom of speech, freedom of religion, you know, can't have illegal searches and seizures, you can, you know, don't have to incriminate yourself, you know the drill, and you know the thing. And so with the thing, they're all acknowledging the right of the people. And if you back way up, like we rewind the tape a lot in the Declaration of Independence, it says we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable or unalienable rights. And among them are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. How do you have life if you can't defend it? Right? You can't maintain life without also acknowledging that you can defend that life. How do you, you know, grant someone the natural right to life and then say, but, you know, like in Justin Trudeau's Canada, you can't defend that with a firearm. You know, like, well, that's a tool, right? Are you saying you can defend it with a fire extinguisher? Are you saying you can defend it with a, you know, flaming cat or nunchucks or ninjas, like hire a team of assassins to guard your house? I don't know. I'm just saying, like, how do you defend life without the most efficient tool, right? But fast forward to Patriots Day, where we have the Battle of Concord and Lexington, and I find it incredibly ironic that King Henry III sent his redcoats to do what? Were they just going to tell him, like, you're going to live under the subject of the king for the rest of your days and take that? No. That was probably what the message ultimately would have been. But the only way they can get that message across is to ensure that they're not going to have an armed population that could come after them and say, no, you're not going to do that. So they went for the guns. They went for the powder. They went for the shot. They went for the primers. And that's when the Patriots stood their ground and said, no, we're not doing that. I don't know who fired the first shot. We'll never know. But guess what happened? The greatest country the world has ever seen was born. And, you know, there was a lot of smart, God-fearing people that were involved in that process. And it took years in order for it to be solidified, especially like when the Bill of Rights was ratified in 1791. There was some water under the bridge there from 1775, April 19th, until 1791. Like, you know, it didn't happen overnight. But what did happen was when they stood their ground and when they fired the shot heard around the world and when the Declaration of Independence was, you know, released, you know, July 4th, 1776, whenever, you know, it actually matriculated out into the world, those patriots, those founding fathers, those people who signed on were pledging everything that they had, their fortunes, their families, their livelihoods, their health, their potential life, in order to give us the country that we have inherited here in 2024. And so often I think about the legislatures that, you know, come and go with elected officials and politicians that take a career in politics and end up saying, you know, we can stand up after having pledged to uphold and defend the Constitution. They swear an oath of office, it's called, to uphold the Constitution against all enemies, both foreign and domestic. And then through the very nature of their work, they break that oath of office and they introduce legislation that erodes the very rights that they were sent there to protect in the first place. I find that incredibly ironic and to a point dystopian, not to mention in my mind treasonous. And I testified at the Colorado State House a couple weeks ago in a bill against a bill that they were introducing very similar to ours, which ended up passing a couple days ago. But when I was there, I heard somebody speak in the public testimony session, and he kind of made that argument. And he actually said, by you guys introducing this type of legislation as sponsors and co-sponsors and then voting for it, you are by default resigning from your position because it violates your oath of office. And I said, huh, that's an interesting take. I've never really thought that through, and I'm still kind of kicking that around in my head. But he's kind of right in principle. We all know in reality and practicality, that's not going to happen. They're not going to go home and say, well, I had a tough day at the office. I introduced some unconstitutional legislation and by de facto, I've now resigned my position because I violated my oath. Like, they're not intellectually honest enough to even come close to that. But anyway, I'd love to hear what you guys have to say about it. 844-500-4242 is the phone number if you want to be on with me today. I'll be taking your calls. We got tons to talk about. I mean, it's not exactly a slow news day right now. Things are happening. You heard Grace Curley say there's a some breaking news out of the court system that the Rust armorer was charged with or sentenced to the fullest extent of the law and got 18 months in prison. So we could talk about that or jail. I guess it's not quite prison, but maybe it is. I don't know. But anyway, she's going to do 18 months. And we got lots of other stuff going on. We obviously have the Iran Israel escalation. We have the protests going on all over the country, blocking traffic. And we got Trump sitting in a courtroom, I guess, allegedly, according to CNN, trying to stay awake, which I don't fault the guy if he does fall asleep in that situation while they're trying to seat the jury and jury selection. So lots going on. But anyway, 844-500-4242. We'll be right back after this. I'm Toby Leary, sitting in for Howie Carr.
Looking for the perfect gift for the Howie Carr fan in your life? Or maybe you're looking for a great deal on a local restaurant or entertainment venue.
We've got them all.
Go to HowieCarrShow.com and click store.
Howie Carr is back.
Welcome back. Today's poll question is brought to you by Eden Rafferty Law. Eden Rafferty, attorneys at law. To see what happened to Howie's leg while having cryo performed at Restore Hyper Wellness, go to EdenRafferty.com. And today's poll question is what and what are the results so far, Jared?
Today's poll question, which you can vote in at HowieCarrShow.com, is would you want to be a juror on a high-profile case? Yes or no?
I would say yes. Probably not at the time, but, you know, for the cool story for the grandkids someday, yes.
43% of the audience says yes. 57% say no.
Pretty interesting. Close. Yeah. I wonder how that jury selection's going to go, too, in Manhattan for Donald Trump. Like, how bad do you have TDS, you know, Trump derangement syndrome, on a scale of 1 to 10? It's kind of like that pain chart at the hospital. Like, are you feeling a little pain? Are you feeling, like, is it a number 4, a number 5?
You can have, like, one of those paint sample color palettes at the door checking the you know, the shade of orange that your skin is.
Yeah, so when you hear Trump's name, do you, you know, turn yellow, orange, red, you know, anyway. 844-500-4242 is the number. Let's go to the phones. Rob, you're first up on the Howie Carr Show. Go ahead, Rob.
Hey, Toby. You left off the punchline to that. They pledge their honor, their sacred honors, their fortunes, their lives. There was a lot of suffering on the part of those signers of the Declaration. Mm. I once heard Paul Harvey, I think, do a show about it, and he went through a really good description. But here's a quick summary. 5 signers were captured by the British and brutally tortured as traitors. 9 fought in the Revolutionary War and died from wounds or hardships. 2 lost their sons in the war, and 2 others had sons captured. At least a dozen of the 56 had their homes pillaged and burned. And that's just a summary. So not only did they pledge it, they really, you know, got it for doing that.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I have researched that. Thanks for the call, Rob. That's what infuriates me the most when we have state or, you know, federal politicians that stand up and, well, let me finish this thought. They stand up and introduce legislation that is contrary to the Constitution. all the while looking you in the eye saying they would never do anything that's unconstitutional. And it's like, you just did. Like, that's pretty obvious. Well, no, we believe the law is on our side. We believe that this will be upheld in legal challenges. And it's like, well, if the fact that I have to do a legal challenge just for this something but that I say you're infringing on my rights about is pretty obvious that we probably should merit a higher level of scrutiny for any of this type of legislation that pushes up against constitutionally enumerated rights, for starters, right? But here's the kicker. If you read the Federalist Papers, this is a fascinating read by our founding fathers like John Jay, and I know Hamilton wrote a bunch of them, and Madison wrote a bunch. And in one of the ones that Madison wrote, he talks about this really key component of the legislature, that they come from the people. They are out of the people. They are families and friends. They're their blood. They're their neighbors. They're their community members. They're the business owners. They're the farmers. They're the people that go to represent them in government. They have an extra special role. This is, again, I'm paraphrasing what Madison wrote, as the gatekeeper of our rights, the gatekeeper. So they are there to preserve, to guard, to ensure that no one gets in and starts to erode our rights. And what has happened in modern America is the gatekeeper has become the oath breaker. And that is the script being flipped over and penciled in by people who aren't pledging their fortunes, their lives, their futures, their families, their, you know, their businesses, their houses against anyone. Like, no one's going to attack them in the middle of the night, raise their house to the ground, capture their kids, and charge them with treason, right? That isn't the way it's going to happen. So the fact that they are tasked with a higher level of I would say, responsibility. And I'm not saying, you know, there is co-equal branches. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to say they have more power. They do actually possess more power, I would say. But so the fact remains that because they lack that constitutional authority to do what it is they're introducing, but they do it anyway, is by definition abuse of power. So anyway, Mike, you're next on the Howie Carr Show. Go ahead, Mike.
Thank you, Toby, for standing up for America, never mind the Constitution.
My pleasure.
I've said this 100 times before, and a lot of people, you know, I don't want to just keep repeating myself, but I'm a kid that was born in Concord, Massachusetts, where my grandfather took care of all the historic land, you know, the land sites and all. I had to do a thesis in order to get out of school and find out who did shoot the first shot, and it was us. Because where they were having disparaging remarks back and forth across the Charles, one of the farmers looked up, saw a fire coming from the center of town, and they yelled out, "They're burning the town." And that's how it all really started. But I'm going to tell you, Concord and Lexington are not the same anymore. They are all, if they had it their way, they would roll a socialist flag up the pole.
Well, thank you for that, Mike. Thanks for standing up for freedom, too. I'm Toby Leary, sitting in for Howie Carr. We will be back after this.
Live from the Matthews Brothers Studios.
Welcome back to the Howie Carr Show. It's Toby Leary sitting in for Howie. Happy to be with you here today and tomorrow. So make sure you set your alarm. And God bless you. I was just about to introduce Grace.
Sorry,
Curley.
I don't think I've ever sneezed on the air before.
And you're in like the guest seat, so you don't have the hot button like to mute yourself.
Because usually I'm so professional.
Right. Well, hey. It's time for Grace's News, and I think we all need a little break from the real, like, news stream that's before our eyes constantly.
So. Well, there's a lot of stories out there that don't have to do with Iran and Israel, which I know you're going to talk about later. But this is still a big story and a fairly tragic, actually a very tragic one. I don't know how people feel about the sentencing. Rust Armorer sentenced to 18 months in prison for involuntary manslaughter, death of cinematographer Helena Hutchins. So obviously this horrible story that all involved this indie film that Alec Baldwin was the producer on. I think they actually ended up still making the movie after all of this madness occurred. We talked about this on the Car Crossover at the end of my show, but I still think people would want to hear your take on this, Toby. She was the armorer. She was in charge of making sure that the weapons on set were safe for people to use. She clearly failed in that job. Do you think 18 months, which I believe is the maximum amount she could have been sentenced to, her name is Hannah Gutierrez Reed. Do you believe that was the right call today?
Well, you know, the buck stops somewhere, right? Somebody died. It was tragic. If somebody hits somebody in a roadway accident and gets found guilty of involuntary manslaughter and somebody dies, they probably do time, right? That's kind of the way it is. So do I agree with it? I don't know. It's funny. I'm very conflicted because of the accidental nature of the death, but it is negligence, right? And when your job is life or death stuff, you have to take that extremely serious. And as we mentioned on the end of your show, Grace, the truth of the matter is there were massive safety violations historically on the set of the show. That means that I believe the burden is on Alec Baldwin as producer of the show, and he's the main guy on that to make those calls. Like, how did this happen? That's unacceptable. This should have never happened. There were firearms-related incidents on the set prior to the fatality. And so, you know, I hate to say it, but I kind of think it was the right call because somebody who's put in a position where they have to check the gun, hand it to the actor, and make sure that the person on the other side of that muzzle is not going to die, that's their job. So I do feel that, you know, they have to, there has to be consequences for people who raise their hand and say, I take that job. That's the job I want. I'm qualified. Here are my qualifications. And, you know, if they fail at that job, people die. So,
yeah. And something that I keep going back to, because Alec Baldwin, after this horrible incident occurred, he did do a lot of press. He did do, you know, a few interviews with the media, which I think if I was his lawyer or PR person, I would have said, yeah, I think we can give people a little break from you for a while. But one of the things that was brought up was the budgeting and how, you know, perhaps because this was an indie film, were they trying to cut corners? Were they not hiring, you know, the best people? I know she had this woman who has now been sentenced. She did have a connection to a pretty famed armorer in Hollywood.
I think, if I'm not mistaken, it was her father. So I think it was a generational thing.
So maybe it was a little bit of nepotism. But yeah, if budgeting was involved, it's like this is the price you're paying. You have to go over and above when it comes to, you know, spending money to make sure that you're ensuring the safety of the cast, because look at how much money he's probably going to end up paying now. And I mean, obviously that's nothing compared to the loss of life,
right?
But if cutting corners to save money was your goal, that backfired big time.
Yeah. And you know, I guarantee that she was well paid and well compensated, even if it was an indie film. Like, I don't think there's too many things that happen in Hollywood that are cheap, let's put it that way. But again, that's still no excuse for incompetence. Like, if your job is to make sure people are safe, you better do your job and do it well. That's really what it comes down to.
Yes, I would agree. There's a lot of new polls out, Toby, and Miranda Devine put in a few of them in her latest piece in the New York Post. In a recent Wall Street Journal poll, it shows that Trump is ahead by up to 8 percentage points in 6 of the 7 crucial states.
That came out a few weeks ago. Now, but there's a new New York Times Siena poll, and I wanted to read you a couple of these and get your reaction. On whether his presidency was good or bad for America, Trump wins hands down. 42% of registered voters say the Trump years were mostly good for America, while just 25% say the same for Biden's time in office. 46% think the Biden presidency has been mostly bad for America compared to 33% for Trump.
And everybody else is completely asleep at the wheel. So, no, the people who think that the 22% that think the Biden presidency has been good for America are the, like, total 100% TDS people who are like, well, at least there's no mean tweets.
Yes.
Like, that's good. And it's like, really?
They,
like,
can rationalize anything at this point.
Yeah, exactly. So that to me is unbelievable. And, you know, Trump, love him or hate him, look at the results that he had. Like, and I know a ton of people, a lot of my friends and contemporaries, family even, that are like, I just can't stand the guy. But he was, like, really good. And I like what he did, but he had to tweet. He had to speak. He had to, like, if he had just shut his mouth. And it's like, yeah, but that's not the guy. Like, you're asking for something that doesn't exist in nature, right? Like,
and it's also just, in my opinion, when people say that, I just want to be like, will you get over yourself?
Right.
Like, will you, if you really think that your feelings or your, you know, the problems that you have with someone's personality outweigh world wars breaking out.
Right.
Like, we're on the cusp of World War III. So I don't really care that he's not your cup of tea. Like, get over it and start thinking about your children and your grandchildren and the state of the world and reprioritize, because you being concerned about Donald Trump's mean tweets, it's just, it's such... It's ridiculous. Yeah. It's ridiculous. And it comes at a real cost.
Yeah. And, you know, from somebody who's a businessman and whatnot, like, when he first came in and reduced that pile of regulations down, like, by whatever it was, 16,000 pages or something like that, I'm like, this is a symphony orchestra playing, because, you know, I live in the world of regulations in both my businesses. They're like, you know, every place I go, it's like, you're running up against man saying you can't do this because of this, 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 and this. And, like, you got to fight your way through this red tape. So here was a guy who understood that, and he put practical things in place like that, lowered taxes, wanted a secure border, wanted a strong military. Like, I don't know how intellectually you can argue with those type of things, but we see it nowadays with everything. I mean, we got people in Chicago chanting death to America. It's like, you know, sometimes you, like, wonder what parallel universe you're living in. And, you know, I know I'm preaching to the choir here, but.
No, it is really crazy. And you know what? Here's something that made me happy, though, on these polls. And Miranda Devine does a great job of pointing it out. She said, she called it his pet topic. She said, even on his pet topic of defending democracy, Biden ties with Trump. Mm. And she later wrote, both Trump and Biden scored 31% on whether they are good for democracy, which must kill the Biden team, since Trump's unique threat to freedom and democracy is the centerpiece of the president's campaign. This is all they're running on, is right. He's bad for democracy. And so the fact that in that poll, like, they are almost at this point, they are almost creating very specific niche polls so that he could win. Like, okay, so you don't think he's as good on the economy, but who do you think's better for democracy? And now we're at a point where even people are going, I don't know, maybe. He's supposed to be Mr. Democracy, Joe Biden.
Right. And the irony of that whole question is, like, do you really think the guy who wants to make sure citizens and have a form of ID and use paper ballots and vote on election day, and we know the results at the end of the day, is good for democracy?
And can vote for who they want to.
and can vote for who's ever on the ballot. And we can keep, you know, that guy can be on the ballot too? Like, are you kidding me? This is not how democracy works. Yeah. We have to control the narrative. It's unbelievable. But
we always say here, we have to kill democracy in order to save democracy.
Right.
That's their backward logic. Grace's news is brought to you by Toyota of Portsmouth, your all-wheel drive headquarters. Toyota of Portsmouth has their trucks and SUVs built for New England, trails, and your everyday commute. No matter where you're going, you want to go with Toyota of Portsmouth. So shop now at toyotaofportsmouth.com. Toby, one last story for you. And I talked a lot about this on Friday, but we have an update and I want your opinion.
Mm.
There has been a push by the Trump team to have more debates and to have them closer and have them earlier than they're planned. Now, the Commission for Presidential Debates has already said we have three presidential debates. We have one vice presidential debate already set up. Now, Trump has agreed to them. And like I said, he's making a point of not only am I agreeing to them, but I want them sooner and I want more of them. Biden has not agreed to them. Recently, major news outlets, including ABC News, the AP, CNN, Fox News, News Nation, NPR, PBS News, they've all come out and they've signed a joint statement urging Biden and Trump to commit to these presidential debates. Really, they're urging Biden to commit because he's the one who's kind of dodging them. So my question for you, which I did pose on Friday, there's three that are set. How many debates do you think we will end up having between Donald J. Trump and Joseph Robinette Biden Jr.?
I would go out on a limb and predict that probably three. I think there'll be three as a result. Like, I can't imagine a scenario, if you're on the Biden team, where putting him on a stage with Donald Trump is a good idea for you if you want to win in the general election. Like, the best thing they ever did was let him stay in the basement, call a lid by 11 a.m. and say, you know, he's going out for ice cream. Like, that was kind of the best thing they ever did. Like, don't let him speak. Don't let him talk. Don't let him sit there and try to defend his ridiculous policies, in my opinion. But, you know, Trump, he just needs to let him respond to a question, and he's already winning.
Yeah, but Trump did have a little trouble with that at the debates. He didn't let him talk enough. I would argue that he should have, and I think he learned that the first debate, and then he let up a little bit in the second one. But every single criticism I heard about Trump during that debate was, why isn't he letting him talk? People need to hear Joe Biden talk. To your point about the basement strategy from Biden's first campaign, not his first campaign in total, but his most recent.
Successful campaign.
Yeah, his first successful campaign of many. This current campaign, I think you could argue he's even less accessible to people. And I think now what they're using is this idea of, well, he's doesn't have time for all that election stuff because he's so focused on being the president.
Running the country.
If this is what's happening when he's busy running the country, I would suggest he hit the campaign trail and maybe things might get a little bit better. But isn't that strange that it's like, at first he was in the basement because of COVID.
Mm.
Now he's in the basement of the White House because he's president. And there's just no access to him. We don't ever hear from him. And when we do hear from him, he says some comment that sparks another war breaking out.
Right. It's so obvious to anyone paying attention. He's like being handled, right? Like,
yes.
And like, oh, where's my cheat sheet on who I got to call on today? Because she's got the question that's already been rehearsed and let's figure this out. And so ready, go. And he tells her he calls on who he's supposed to call on, right? They're just handling him. He's just they're just bringing him up to the microphone, hoping and praying it doesn't go that bad. And then when it does, they just come in and say, all right, that's enough for today, folks. And he smiles and wonders which direction to walk. Like, that's the way it is. And I can't. I know there's people out there that genuinely like the guy and support him, but I don't see bumper stickers. I don't see anyone wearing his hat. I don't see anyone wearing their, and this is in blue Massachusetts, right?
Yeah.
I just don't see people waving the Biden flag around. Every once in a while, you'll see the Prius you pass on the highway with the Biden bumper sticker, but very, very rarely.
Toby, my question is, and you've not to age shame you, but you have been around a little bit longer than I have.
Thank you.
When do you tend to think people start up with that stuff, like the bumper stickers? Because I've seen one Joe Biden sign. I live in a very, very liberal neighborhood, especially, but a liberal town in general. But I saw one face of Joe Biden with the aviator glasses on that says, like, vote Joe. But I've seen one. But then I'm thinking last time there was a ton in my neighborhood, but it might have been closer to the actual election. When do you think people bring out their stuff?
Well, I think it's probably going to be in the late summer, early fall.
Okay.
But I'm even talking about just remnants from the last election.
Yeah.
Like, you'd see that, like, I remember
people
seeing
peeling
Obama
off the
stuff,
stickers.
Like, the whole presidency of Obama,
yes.
And well after, you like, they didn't take their stuff off, right?
Yes.
In my opinion. And I saw much more support for it. I had guys go on Facebook that were friends that were like, oh, today what made me so happy to be an American because I saw Obama do this awesome thing. And I was like, wow, okay, he's all in. So anyway.
That's a really good point. The people used to keep them up for a long time, and they must have gone in and peeled them off.
Yeah, well, hey, you never know. All right, well, we'll be back. Thanks so much, Grace, for Grace's news, and we will be right back after this. I'm Toby Ritt.
The Howie Carr Show.
On this week's episode of Meet the Experts, I spoke with Dr. Mark DiStefano and Dr. Thomas Brand of Northeast Hair Restoration. Dr. DiStefano performed my flawless hair transplant years ago. He's now developed a new minimally invasive procedure with nearly zero pain and little to no downtime. Here's a preview.
With the precision follicular extraction, we don't have to shave any areas, and it will be virtually unnoticeable when you walk out of the office.
If I come in for the PFE, do I have to wear a baseball cap for a while as I did under the earlier procedures?
No, that's the beauty of it, is that when you leave the office, when you're walking out the door, no one would notice that you had anything happen to the back of your scalp whatsoever.
That's a taste of Meet the Experts with this week's experts, Dr. Mark DiStefano and Dr. Thomas Brand of Northeast Hair Restoration. It's available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your Howie Carr Show podcasts.
The Howie Carr Show is back.
844-500-4242 is the number. You can also press 2 for the Chump Line. You got a few minutes to get your Chump Line recordings recorded. So make sure you do that now if you want to get on the Chump Line, which we will go over at the 5 o'clock hour. Obviously a high point of the Howie Carr Show every day. Like, I know a lot of people like run to the car at 5 o'clock just to hear the Chump Line. And I might have been guilty of that a couple times in my life as well. So 844-500-4242 is the number if you want to talk to me. Toby Leary sitting in for Howie Carr. So we got all kinds of good stuff going on, plenty of time left to talk about it. And I guess when I use the word good stuff, I mean like news stuff, not necessarily good things as a result of that news. But, you know, I've been watching this protest going on around the country. And actually, Jared, play. So before I have you play the cut, we're going to play cut 14 in a sec. But you know, I started off hearing about the San Francisco Golden Gate Bridge, and then, you know, then you heard about some stuff in New York and now some Miami and whatever. Well, this was an orchestrated event that's actually worldwide. So go ahead and play cut 14.
On April 15th, people across 4 continents will launch an economic blockade in solidarity with Palestine. Through this coordinated mobilization, we will jam up trade choke points and disrupt the global economy. 30 cities and counting have joined the effort. This comes as Yemen is bombed to secure global trade routes and billions of dollars continue to fund the occupation. The time has come to open up new fronts against the Zionist war machine. It's time for collective risk. The global movement for Palestine has been gaining unprecedented momentum. What is happening in Gaza is unbearable. And we know that symbolic actions are not enough. We must escalate.
Yeah, unbelievable. We'll talk more about this on the other side. I'm Toby Leary, sitting in for Howie Carr.